welcome to another episode of the Gadget Show podcast, the place where tech meets fun, curiosity sparks innovation, and sometimes things break down. But don't worry, because we're here to help you figure out what's worth keeping,
yes,
what's worth ditching,
okay,
and what might just change your life.
Oh, that's the category I love.
Yeah, life-changing.
But before we go into all the tech madness that we've got planned today, I've got to do a big shout out to our partner. We love you, JBL. And in particular, as I touch the funky screen on these things, there are Tor Pro 3 earbuds. Honestly, if you're not listening to us in premium noise-cancelling bliss, well, you're not really listening, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's true. I've been testing them out on my travels, as you can imagine, and they're an absolute lifesaver because they completely block out the noise on planes and trains. And the sound quality is next level crisp.
Yeah.
I can even hear your jokes in glorious.
Oh, lucky things. You're just nodding off and then I come out with some stupid line and it wakes you up like some horrible nightmare.
Exactly.
But speaking of the earbuds, I've also been testing them out and I'm a big gym fan. I know you wouldn't think to look at me, but I am.
No,
I love going to the gym and I jump up and down and do all kinds of weird maneuvers.
Oh.
And even in these lug holes, all right,
massive,
which can, if I get the angle right, receive sky, they are secure and safe. I really rate them, genuinely.
All right, enough about our headphones, love story. Let's get into the tech madness.
Let's do it.
This week in our glorious little podcast, we're discussing tech that can make you rich. And I've got a brand new follow drone from DJI, the Neo.
So looking forward to testing
first
that.
First of all, before you can get your hands on that, a few questions. You can go first.
So this is from all of you out there. This one comes from Chris McAvoy. He's one of our Patreon subscribers. We love the Patreon crew. Hugely appreciated. He says, hey, GS gang, loving this new format and so good to see the OGs back in the saddle. Nicely put. My question is this. Do you think the pace of technological change stroke innovation is noticeably slowing with phones, TVs, computers, gaming, etc., all now pretty much going through evolution changes rather than revolution? Copying each other's homework and rebadging previous innovations as new. For example, Apple USB-C, AI assistants, etc. Remember Microsoft Clippy? I do. I've got Clippy on my weapon in Halo. Anyway, what are the reasons for the noticeable lack of real innovation, do you think? Is it consumer-driven? Are we all just happy with what we've got nowadays? Have we peaked?
Yeah, we've touched on this before, haven't we, about whether we've peaked or not. And we've kind of said that in a consumer sense, there is less new technology coming out, but much more focus on AI.
Well, what we had was news that you brought us. That Apple were going to move away from their big
annual launch.
Well, they do two, don't they?
Yeah.
And could that be evidence for what Chris is talking about? I'm not sure. Okay, the rate of exponential growth remains the same. So, you know, old Moore's law is still pretty much on target. And so that is the kind of backbone on which a lot of these innovations are, you know, supported. And we've sort of sidestepped, haven't we? You mentioned AI. You can't underestimate what's going on. I mean, any interaction now with a lot of interactions that I have with natural, you know, language processors like GPT-4, Omni, are so good. It's so impressive. Mm. I wonder if we're just sort of moving sideways a little bit, but actually there's going to be an explosion in that area.
I wonder whether we're getting less hardware and more software. And that's why it feels very much like we're not getting as much consumer hardware coming in. The upgrades don't seem to be as mind-blowing as they used to be.
That's a good point. As we sit here, something else you mentioned in the last episode was the imminent arrival of Apple Intelligence, right? And the hilarious...
October the 28th.
There you go. And the hilarious nature of a company launching a new range of products without actually having that, you know, most sort of talked about function even available on launch. It could be that we kind of catch up, that Chris's point will be made mute by the arrival of these amazing services. Equally, it might not. Might be a bit of a damp squib. We don't know at this point. I'm still a bit loved up with AI. It's still blowing my mind. But yes, I know what you mean. The hardware, I mean, could it be that the likes of NVIDIA are focused on the money to be made in AI as opposed to, you know, kind of gaming and other sort of handhelds? I mean, I don't know. I really think this is interesting. It depends what sector you're looking at. Say, for example, gaming handhelds, right? There's a massive amount of new gaming handhelds. Almost weekly, there'll be a new handheld device, either pocket-sized or a kind of competitor to the Steam Deck. VR, has gone through massive change. Every year, there's a new VR helmet. You know, there's one by Big Screen that's really, really tiny and gives you an incredible field of view and great clarity. The Vision Pro comes out. Do you see what I mean? There is a lot of innovation. I think if you look at Apple, maybe less so, but in other sectors, it does feel like that rapid change is continuing. I don't know.
Okay, let's move on.
I genuinely don't know how to answer that, but Chris, it's a great question and thank you for asking it.
Andy Morris on Facebook says, what VR are you using and where do you think it will go, especially in the in the flight racing sim area?
Yeah.
And great to see you back. Chest 5, Jace, mate.
Chest 5 back at you.
Remember the Chest 5s?
Chest 5.
Pretty sure they were pretty painful back in the day.
It wasn't a comfortable way of saying hello.
Not really, no.
Especially to a stranger. I'm a big simmer, huge simmer, Microsoft Flight Sim, X-Plane, all the driving sims, love it. And yeah, VR is an incredible way to enhance your simulation experience. Mm-hmm. I would say it's becoming, the clarity is improving. You know, the resolution is becoming better. You know, things like eye tracking and you know, foveated rendering and some of the other innovations in VR that are now becoming cheaper and are rolling out in new headsets are going to make the whole thing a little bit more affordable for a lot of people. I think, interestingly, for sort of 500 quid or whatever the Quest 3 is now, right, that investment compared to, say, three screens, which is what you'd have to do to kind of get close to that kind of field of view, is incredibly good value. So I'd say the way it's going, it's getting cheaper and higher resolution.
Do you want to do the last one from Andrew Wiggins Photos?
Yeah, mobile phones. We got to plenty good enough levels. Where do we go next for manufacturers? What does that mean?
Well, I think it basically he's saying mobile phones, where do they go next? And obviously, you know, you've just talked about Apple Intelligence and the AI that will be used with mobile phones. But we've also, I think we're establishing the fact that where do they go to next? We're not quite sure, but what we think is they might become slightly less useful if we have wearable technology that can do everything they can do and more in a healthier way. So without people looking down at the phone all the time and getting a bad neck. Or,
well, we see,
you know, walking along, looking down at their phone and walking into everything. Because nobody can walk and do anything on their phone at a normal speed. Trust me, because when you get off a phone, when you get off a plane and everybody's on their phone, it's so annoying because they're just walking like that with their bags.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I think...
I detract slightly.
Not at all. I think as the Orion project at MetaConnect showed us, you know, which for those of you that missed the previous episode, we're talking about what Susie's wearing, her glasses, but with a really good, really high quality augmented reality display and a neural interface from a wristband, which is bonkers. I don't know why they call it a neural interface. Sure, that would be on your head. But anyway, some form of gestural input from a wristband. That's where it's going. I think we'll have a transitional period to answer Andrew's question specifically, where these wearable glasses are available. And then within a matter of a year or two, mobile phones will just feel silly. Because a good pair of glasses that can last for a day, that can give you your assets in a comfortable and intuitive way, is definitely going to beat a mobile phone, I think.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm still slightly reticent. I still think it will take longer for people to actually detach from their phones because we've had them as an appendage to our bodies for so long. I think, you know, I know it's easy to go, yeah, but look where we are now and it's drip, drip, drip. I think it's not going to happen in 2 years' time. We're not all going to be wearing glasses.
Not in 2 years, but in 5 years.
Maybe,
And just think about landlines.
I know.
I mean, who would have thought that you wouldn't be sat in the hall on the yellow pages saying, "Mom, shut up, I'm on the phone."
And your mum go, "You've been there with them at school all day. Why are you on the phone to them?" Yeah, I know. Oh, I do love those days.
And we'll have that same nostalgia for our smartphones.
No, we won't. it'll never happen again. Talking of nostalgia, yeah, that moves us quite nicely, actually, into our next topic, because I've got an interesting one for this week's headline discussion.
Yeah.
Do you remember a few weeks ago when we discussed the PlayStation 5 Pro and its huge £699 price tag?
Yeah.
Well, that drama escalated further as they also put up a pre-order for a special 30th anniversary for PlayStation, and it was nearly £1,000. Do you remember that? It sold out in seconds, and it's now on eBay for over £5,000. So that got me thinking, what tech people might have, you know, in their cupboards, sheds, attics, whatever, that could be worth a small fortune. And what do you think that's coming out now in the future that could be valuable?
So let me just say this, right? I wish you'd had this conversation with me.
I'm having it now.
No, but listen, in like the year 2005.
Oh, so do I? Because you wouldn't open anything. You'd keep everything boxed.
Well, I even did a thing on Gadget Show. Do you remember? I think we did the same item a couple of times. I remember going to the auction houses just round here in Birmingham somewhere, even then, and looking at house clearances of things like Nintendo 64s and looking at it and not even choosing it. And I could have got it for like £5 or something.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And the idea that the stuff I had in the 80s, which I've now had to rebuy at great cost. So the answer to your question. So, well, let's look at what's available right now. Right, online, and what sort of prices things from back in the day are, and then we can work out what we might be able to keep in the box right now.
So what we're talking about here is vintage electronics. Yeah. So anything that's 20 years old or more is considered to be retro vintage.
South of the noughties.
South of the noughties.
That's what I say.
Yeah. So, for example, an Apple iPod Classic.
I wish.
Now, I was absolutely so much in love with this gadget because it's also what I did my screen test for the Gadget Show. I talked about the iPod.
Did you really?
Yeah, and how it was a life-changing gadget and it was the first true unisex gadget because it was wasn't it?
Yeah. Good angle.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Well, it got me the job anyway. Anyway, now, if you've got one of those originals, you can get anything up from £150 to £500, obviously depending on the condition of it.
Doesn't have to be in a box though, right?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if it was boxed, it'd be worth a lot more than that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. But we can go through a few here.
Okay, Nintendo Game Boy?
Yeah.
Of which I have several.
Right, you can get between £100 and £300 for that. So obviously strong retro gaming appeal for that.
That's a lot of money though.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
But I mean...
But if you hang on to it, will it be worth more in 10 years?
But my problem is I keep playing with it.
Well...
I should probably just, like, polish it and leave it.
Here's another one for you, music lovers. Sony Walkman, the TPS L2, 1979. I had one of these.
Blue aluminium, silver, with an orange button that you pressed and would enable you to talk to the second person on the headphones because there were two slots. Now, how much have you got for this?
Yeah, I've got between £400 and £800.
Right. If you can find me, right, a first generation Sony Walkman, right, that model, for £800, let alone £400, I will buy it now. You can't get it for that.
They're really
£2,500.
Yeah. A what?
No, honestly.
Because they're so highly sought after.
Because I want one. And I'm telling you right now, that is woefully underpriced.
Okay. Commodore 64, 1982.
Oh, come on.
Pricing that at between £200 and £500.
Yeah, it sounds about right to
me. One of the best-selling home computers of all time, obviously sought after for its role in gaming history.
Well, the issue with that is that, like, a lot of those sort of beige products from back in the day, like the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, and so on, is they discolour. They discolour because of the ultraviolet. So if you can find one that's been kept in the box, and they go a rather nasty colour, actually, you can. There are processes. I've seen YouTubers that they do stuff where they
clean them up a bit.
They clean, yeah, they use like a. I don't know what
they
how they do
like
it.
A nicotine
they
kind
do.
Of stain,
yeah,
don't they?
Like a
they
dirty look, beige.
Yeah, dirty beige. Here's one.
That's a good name for a
band.
No, I was going to say for a stand-up comedian.
Well, you can take
ladies
that
and gentlemen,
one.
Dirty beige. And then you come on and you go, all right.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Moving on. Off topic.
Yeah.
This is what got me into gadgets, a Polaroid camera.
All right.
When
okay.
I was really young.
Yeah.
So if you have unearthed a SX-70, which would have been from 1972. Ah, were we even born then? Yes, we were. The price for that would be between £200 and £600. So that, obviously, a retro instant camera that just revolutionised photography.
And
because it gave you an instant picture.
It did.
It and sounds stupid now, doesn't it, saying that, with the digital world.
The thing is, it was
so different. You have to wait and go to the shop and, you know, get half of it back because you've got fingers in front of the lens and everything, and some of them were discoloured, and they were all rubbish, weren't they, really, all the pictures in those days.
I mean, what was great about this is it didn't matter whether it was rubbish, because you had it on Christmas morning and you could look at you and Nan gurning into the camera immediately. And also the form factor, the design of those things, it's so romantic, such a beautiful object. Talking of beautiful objects.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Susie.
Oh, bless you. I thought you were thinking about the Atari.
I was.
Yeah, I thought you were. So the Atari 2600.
Oh, don't.
1977.
So I've got one of it. I've got so many of these things on your list, but this...
You've literally got everything I've mentioned.
Came in two variants, right? The Woody, as we called it, which had a faux wooden front, which is very iconic.
Like a walnut, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And also, do you know, orange piping, orange little sort of outline, which when I bought mine, I had to get an artist to redo the orange because I'm so OCD about it. And it also came as the Vader, all right? Which was the all black, which is just so cool.
1977?
So cool.
Yeah.
God.
Okay. So if you got one of those, you can expect to get between 100 and 400. I mean, obviously, it always depends on the quality and everything.
Yeah.
Right. Apple Macintosh.
Okay. Interesting.
Right. So.
About 84.
1984, 128K. What do you reckon?
Me?
So one
Six,
of the.
£700?
A bit. Further north of that, actually.
Really?
Yeah, between £1,000 and £3,000.
What?
Yep, depending on, obviously, the quality.
That one wrong. Wow.
One of the first mass market personal computers with a graphical user interface, making it highly collectible. That's why that is. What about Sega Genesis, Mega Drive, 1988, 89?
Yeah, got that.
Could get between $1,000 and $350 for that.
Yeah, but what if you whack the Mega CD on there? That's what you want. Play Sewer Shark.
All right, next one then. Sony Trinitron. TV.
So I'm a bit of a collector of the Sony PCMs.
Really? That surprises me.
Yeah, which are similar. They're cathode ray tubes, but they look like something out of Blade Runner. Love these. Do you know what? I got mine out of a skip.
Did you?
I had a little...
Skip dipper.
I had a contact at the local tip, and he would text me and say, I think we've got something. I'd say, why are you speaking like that? Are you all right? And I'd go down and I grabbed, I bought one and I nicked off with two.
Buy one, get one free.
Yeah. And then I sort of repaired them a little bit. I had to send them to her. It was weird, actually. I won't say where I was living in case Roger gets arrested. But there was really, really weird. There was a guy in this town where I was living and he was like a Sony repair guy from the 80s. I mean, how cool is that? And I took one of them to him and he said, yeah, I can repair that.
Have you still got it now?
I've got three, yeah.
So, depending on the condition, obviously, between £50 and
£500. No.
Yeah. That's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, obviously, prices fluctuate depending on the condition, the rarity. And
do you know what? Listen to this. This is amazing, right? I put them on when I'm doing my home, because I do, obviously, I'm really into my retro gaming and stuff, right? Mm. And I put them on and then all the kids come in to the room. And they go, turn that off. And I'm like, what? That noise. I'm like, what noise? So I did a video. I'm not joking. This is really honestly true, right? I did a video and I think I put it on Instagram and I said, if you can hear this, you're not an OG.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a tone that only young people can hear. Yeah. And it even worked on the social media post. The tone went through the camera and I still couldn't hear it.
That's... In fact, I've been somewhere recently where that tone was playing in the town because it's stopped them, you know, kids sort of lingering and drinking on street corners, which was obviously what we used to do all the time. But I was with a 24-year-old, our sound engineer, and Nick was going, oh, can we get out of here, that noise?
No.
And I'm like, what noise?
I think that's bad. Deploying sonic...
Yeah, it was
deterrence for young people. That's like something out of a horror movie.
Well, it was in another country, but it was genuine. Because I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And he went, can't you hear that? I'm like, no. And he went, oh, we've got to get out of here. And we had to move to a different
area. That's what they're like in my front room.
Wow. Finally.
Yeah.
Before we go on to the next section, Nokia 3310s.
No idea.
From 2000.
No idea how much that would cost.
So a legendary phone, obviously known for its incredible battery life, which would still be charged now, all these years later. And between £50 and £150. So not a massive price,
no.
But if you got one in the cupboard and you need a bit of cash. Right, before we wrap up this little retro section, yeah. I just want to do some of the most valuable retro video games, which you'll like this.
Love it.
So have a guess at this one. Super Mario Bros. 1985,
yeah.
Sealed first edition. What do you reckon? It's got to be unopened first print
so
copy.
So I've probably got most of the ones you're going to mention, but they'll just be rattling around in a box somewhere in my attic.
Well, if you've got this one boxed, it's worth $1 million to £1.5 million pounds. Seriously.
Oh, my God.
Honestly, staying on Super Mario 64.
Yeah.
Nintendo 64, 1996. So it's not even that long ago,
see,
really.
The Nintendo 64, to me, I'm like, that's a modern console.
I know. Sealed first edition. Recently,
yeah.
One went for $1 million.
Oh, my God.
And they
God.
Now say, if you've got one between $800,000 and £1.2 million, if it's a perfectly graded, sealed copy.
There's a bit of a controversy there around the grading. I'll just let you know that, because as a big retro gaming fan, as you know, the community is not particularly happy about the way that these sort of third parties have stepped into this area and have inflated the values of these things. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
Carry on. Give me some more numbers.
I've got a Pokemon Red or Blue.
Yeah.
Game Boy, 1996, 1998. It's got to be sealed.
Right.
What do you reckon? Have a guess. Have a guess.
Well, based on all your craziness.
I mean, come back from the last one a bit, though.
Yeah. Well, 98, you say? 8,000?
10,000 to 80,000.
What?
Yeah. So sealed copies of these have risen significantly in value recently, especially the first edition versions. So there you go.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked.
So if you have got any of these games boxed, I mean, have a look. You know, go online and have a look if you need a bit of cash. But I do think also, like, is this a peak, or if you keep them for another 10 years, would it double?
Maybe, but I just want to say, just to represent my fam, you know, the community of retro gamers.
Go on then.
You know, a lot of this concerns me. You know, it's third parties inflating the value of things for nothing but monetary gain. I'm happier to go to a car boot and, sort through a placky bag from someone's attic and get a dusty old copy of, Sonic the Hedgehog or...
I've got one more for you. If you've got Air Raid from the Atari 2600, 1982.
Yeah, I've got Air Raid, but I mean, it's not mint.
Okay, well, one of the rarest Atari 2600 games. It's very valuable, especially if it's in its original packaging. You can get up to $100,000 for it. Madness.
That's insane. Can I just say this, that I don't know if I have Air Raid, actually. I've got several Atari 2600. I mean, I've got like 20 Atari 2600 games or something like that. Very few of them are in the boxes because the boxes were cardboard, right?
Yeah.
And the artwork on the original 2600 games was incredible. And you had this sort of, it was so seductive, the artwork, that it actually affected what you saw. So you'd have this incredible artwork for something like Breakout. It'd be like an astronaut and some incredible spaceship or something. I can't remember. There might be asteroids. But anyway, and... you'd then play the game, which is just a bat and a ball and some bricks.
Right.
But your
mind.
Yes. Especially as a youngster.
Took that image along with it. So it seemed more sophisticated when you were playing with it.
I mean, the artwork was beautiful. But the boxes perished. You know, they got dented and squished. So
But that's why, you see, if someone has protected it, it's worth so much money because they are incredibly rare. They're just rare gems.
The other thing it brings to mind as well is the fact that now we've moved from physical copies, not completely, but we've moved from physical copies, like the PS5 Pro, and the fact that you have to pay extra to get the drive on it is encouraging you all the time. And I feel upset about that because I think if I pay, you know, 50 quid or whatever it is for a AAA title, it's probably more than that, and it's digital only, I should be able to trade that at a car boot in 2035, but you can't.
You want a tangible asset. You want something that you can touch and see and feel and store and look at and be able to sell on if you want to.
Fungible.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that. So, you know, auctions and specialised marketplaces recently have sold these products for just eye-popping amounts if they're in pristine condition.
Yeah, incredible.
There you go.
Lesson there, you see, young Jace.
Don't rip everything open.
Go on Christmas morning. Yeah. Amazing. Absolutely astonishing stuff.
Are you ready for the gadget of interest?
I can't wait, Susie.
Well, do you remember that you tried the Hover Air X1?
Yeah, which I was very impressed drone. With. The kind of follow me drone that kind of followed me okay.
It did follow you okay.
The Avata 2, that's the one that blew my mind.
Ah.
Because that was incredible. Do you remember? I flew all around, yeah. Under the table, around the microphones.
Landed it on your hand.
It was amazing. Well, so the Hover X1, I landed on my hand, didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've got something to beat it. This is the DJI Neo. Look, it's a little thing of beauty.
I love it. Oh, interestingly, straight away, very rigid construction, and it has protective shrouds over the props, which is a really good thing when you're giving it to me.
Exactly. Would you like
I don't have a lot of faith in this, but I'm going to give it a go. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, have a go, and I'll sort of run through the specs as you're firing it up and playing. So Jace is going to go out in our studio, which is effectively a warehouse, which is quite low ceilings, actually. And there's lots of things to bump into, so good luck.
Oh, blimey, it's doing something.
It's got to scan you.
All right, okay. Okay, I've been briefed by the production team that I'm supposed to press this button. Hold it.
Medium.
Medium. 3, 2, 1. Oh.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Okay, so far, so good. But look, can I just say... everyone, that I have a history with drones and it's not a good one. They tend to go berserk and smash
to
pieces.
I've got a good feeling about today.
Okay.
I've got a good feeling. You go and see if it follows you, because it is a follow drone.
If I turn my back to it, though, it probably won't follow me, will it? Come on.
Come on, little man. Yes, it's now following Jason. Obviously, you can see this if you're watching on YouTube, but it's doing its thing.
That's amazing.
So far, so good. Jason is running. It's following him. It weighs 135 grams, making it the lightest DJI drone yet.
This is amazing.
It's 130 by 157 by 48.5 millimetres. It is compatible with all of the DJI controllers.
No.
How are you getting on?
Well, yeah.
That's brilliant. Jason's just run and it's fled after him. Flight time of up to 18 minutes or 17 minutes with the propellers off. The battery... What? Have you crashed?
I told you! Oh, I feel a bit bad because it was actually doing really well and I turned a corner quite near to a wall, not intentionally, and it came a cropper. So now I know at speed I've got to give it a little bit more room to do a turning circle. I'm going to chalk that down to a win. You heard it hit the wall.
I didn't. I just heard it stop. I was just about to say it's got a flight time of 18 minutes or 17 minutes with the propellers off, but you know.
I'm going to say this, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to butt in there. I'm going to say this, that now I know that when it's at full pace, because as you can see, I'm out of breath, I was pegging it through there.
Well, I did see you run off.
I turned right. I didn't do it intentionally. I went round a bin, and the bin was right near the wall.
Oh, that wasn't fair.
So it couldn't arrest itself quick enough to make the turning circuit hit the wall. So I now know if I go into a forest, if I'm jogging or whatever, maybe that's not the environment. But if you're running around a park
or on a beach,
it's absolutely mega. Obviously, with a beach, you'd have to watch the wind, because when these things are small like this, they're often not that great.
It's very light.
But
it's 135 grams, which I did say earlier, but you'd got run off into the other room. So
I'm really impressed.
Yeah, so how did you feel about it?
I think it was great. I mean, I'd be interested to know if it'll still work because I...
Smashed it.
Yeah, let's just see if it... All I'm going to do is test if it still works after hitting a brick wall.
Just do another little walk around and I can finish doing the specs because you didn't give me enough time.
Well, this is quite a complex area that we're in here. There's lots of objects.
So there's a maximum transmission of 10 kilometres in FCC mode. Got 12 megapixels, a video resolution of 4K, and a video format is your MP4. In essence, the DJI Neo is a lightweight, compact drone that's good for beginners and navigating tight spaces. It's also regulation friendly, allowing flights over people in the UK, but not over crowds, obviously. And not into walls.
I think it's good. Let's see if it'll come home.
Bring it home. Here it comes.
Well, we've got our producer following it. I'm not sure how I'm supposed to stop it. Maybe like that. Wow! Wow!
He did it.
Wow! That's impressive.
Shall we talk about price here?
Yeah, how much is it again?
Well, it's 169.
Wow, that's good, isn't it?
Well,
that is really impressive.
You know, because the Hover X1 was 350.
Yeah.
And the general feeling is that this has got so much more because, you know, you can use it with the headset, you can use it with the controllers. So its ecosystem is bigger, but
so you can use the DJI peripherals with this device. That's really good.
Exactly, and it's the Neo.
And there's also a function I've seen in some of the reviews that I've seen where I'm pretty sure you can use the app as a microphone, so you can talk into your phone. So you could kind of create content. I don't know how effective it would be, but if you just want a novel way of doing some stuff when you're going on holiday or you're going, you know, outward bound, you know, up into the mountains or somewhere. It's almost the sort of money you could spend to go and do a kind of two-week stay somewhere. It's not mad money,
is it? I'm about to go to Sydney to the Blue Mountains. Can I borrow it? Yes.
There you go. Result. There you go, Susie. Your new drone.
Excellent. So it's time to draw the curtains on this week's podcast. It's been an absolute blast. We hope that you've enjoyed it. We will be back in 7 days with another tech-filled podcast.
I can't wait. And time for another quick shout out to our brilliant sponsors, JBL. We love their Tour Pro 3 earbuds.
And to get you in the mood for how great these really are, go onto YouTube and check out John's Deep Dive.
Brilliant. Enjoy that. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.